Welcome to Jaguars Postgame. JP Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, and Jaguars great Fred Taylor break down today's game. You'll also hear from head coach Gus Bradley, as well as Jaguars highlights. Jaguars Postgame is brought to you by Geico, Farrah & Farrah, Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Brooks Rehabilitation, and by EverBank. Jaguars Postgame starts right now.
Welcome into the HananiaAutos.com studio at EverBank Field. Final score in Week 3, Ravens 19, Jaguars 17. The Ravens improved to 3-0. The Jaguars fall to 0-3. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, and Fred Taylor. And let's go right to the ending of this game. The Jaguars took a 17-16 lead with 7:27 to play. And because of the Jags' defense getting a couple of takeaways, they ended up with three more drives after that point. It was an interception, a blocked field goal, and then the other pick to end the Jaguars' threat there after Tucker hit a field goal with 1:02 to play and just couldn't execute offensively towards the tail end of this ball game today.
Can't run the ball. Haven't been able to run the ball all day, and they're trying to run some clock. I get what they're doing when they're already in field goal range for Jason Myers, and then on third and long, after not being able to run the ball, Blake Bortles takes a sack, makes it a longer field goal attempt. Maybe that affects the trajectory. That gets blocked, and then Blake, the worst sack I can remember a Jaguar quarterback taking in a big moment. He escapes pressure, JP and Fred, only to roll out. He's well out of the pocket, throw it away, and he gets tracked down from behind. Not only do you lose the time, do you lose the yardage, Fred, you lose your final timeout. That was a ball game right there.
You hate to see him lose in that fashion. But, I mean, at the same time, I saw where throughout the entire game, they did a lot of things where they would just shoot themselves in the feet. The penalties got to go. I mean, just careless penalties.
We've said that every week, though.
Right. And I think it's more of an emphasis this week because there were a lot of opportunities that they got penalties that kept the Ravens' drive alive or either hurt your drive. So you can't do it. I mean, those were critical, you know, third down penalties. Face mask, hands to the face, roughing. Fowler has to play better. And I mean, this game shouldn't even been close.
Should have been close.
It shouldn't be have been that close, because if you give yourself an opportunity with these penalties, then I mean, you're gonna keep your momentum. Mm-hmm. Worst case, play field position, but field position game, and your defense is gonna go out there and play better and stop them, which they did throughout most of the game. On third down, they were excellent. But for me, it's the penalties. The reason they lost today is because of the careless plays, the penalties in critical situations. The fourth quarter was good football for the fans, great entertainment.
Yeah.
But at the same, it shouldn't even come to that.
Blake Bortles today, 24-38 passing, 194 yards, two touchdowns, but the three interceptions key. And, a week last week where this team and this quarterback said that, hey, I've got to play better football and make better decisions to help this football team. Not the best ending of the day for him.
Yeah, he led the league with 18 interceptions last year. He's on pace to throw 32 right now. I mean, two a game on average, and, you know, that pace won't hold up. But even though the throws he was completing today, JP, we're sitting here watching the studio, it's gone back to what it looked like kind of his rookie year with the ball coming out of his hand funny.
Right.
Really tightened up the mechanics last year with Tom House, and it almost looks like that year didn't happen as far as that goes, Fred. He's so many flutter balls thrown out there, including that one that was picked off by Mosley. Early on, it was like a shot put out there. I mean, I just don't know how to I can't understand why it's gotten to that point after it got so much better in that department last year.
Yeah, some ducks out there. My thing is he being patient? Is he setting his feet? Does he trust the line? They shuffled some guys in there.
Yeah, new starters today.
Does he think, the pressure is a little bit more in front of him than it really is? I thought they did well. They blocked pretty good throughout the first half. But this is the third game in a row where he's thrown an interception in the first quarter, and that's deflating.
Let's go to the locker room now. Jeff Lagerman has head coach Gus Bradley. Jeff.
All right, thank you, JP. Gus, a slow start with the football team, but then came back, had the lead, and then multiple turnovers there at the end of the ball game with an opportunity to kind of cement that lead, and weren't able to do that.
No, you're right. We were in two really four-minute situations where we had the ball in good field position, have an opportunity just to earn a first down. you know, one, even one in one of the two drives, and we didn't do that. And, you know, and then we ended up getting the field goal blocked.
For your offense, the inability to run the football to have balance, it's been talked about for a couple of weeks. What's going to take to kind of get that balance back to take some pressure maybe off of the quarterback who is struggling?
Well, you're right. We got to keep, you know, the running game, you just keep going at it. They had a good running game, and, you know, both teams were trying to stick to it. You know, you just got to keep practice, got to keep with the execution, and keep working up to the second level. And there's some execution things that we got to continue to work on with our guys.
Defensively, you always preach about it being about the ball, and you're able to get them. Not only that, but on special teams as well, but being able to capitalize from a point standpoint has to occur, doesn't it?
It does. You know what? And I thought that the special teams set up a score, and you know, with the fumble recovery, and we got that field goal. But, you know, in a clutch time, in a situation like we need it, you know, and that didn't block it well enough to get the field goal off to even give us a chance. So, you know, and defense too. We got some turnovers, got some opportunities, get some points on the board. Just didn't capitalize on it.
Team sits at 0-3. What do you say to your team after a game like this?
Well, as the head coach, it's my responsibility to get things right and get things right quickly. And, you know, they got to keep coming to work and keep finding ways. And, you know, there's times during the year where you rely on your character, and this is one of them.
All right. Thank you, Gus.
Okay. Thank you.
There's head coach Gus Bradley in the postgame locker room with Jeff Loggeman. We'll come back. Jeff will go inside the locker room after the Jags fall to the Baltimore Ravens. 19-17, the final. This is Jaguars postgame on Jaguars Radio. The JTA Stadium Shuttle has a new name, the Game Day Express. New name, same great service, price, and locations. The Game Day Express. Take it to the bank. Final score in Week 3, Baltimore 19, Jacksonville 17. The Ravens are now 3-0. The Jags fall to 0-3. And inside the Jags locker room, Jeff Loggeman has tight end Mercedes Lewis. Jeff?
All right. Thank you, JP. Mercedes, to start at the kind of beginning of the ball game, a slow start for the offense and having a hard time kind of finding a rhythm in a running game. Why? I know a lot of guys search for answers, but are the players able to understand what it is?
I think you know, obviously we want to come out and start fast. That's something that we emphasize all the time. And, you know, after two games, we hadn't got the running game going much. I wanted to, you know, try to get that going a little bit. But for one reason or another, self-inflicted, you know, issues, you know, we couldn't get it going. And, you know, I felt like we beat ourselves and got off to a slow start. And, you know, it was kind of an uphill battle, you know, the rest of the game. So,
how frustrating is it to where you guys take the lead and then you have some takeaways to where the offense is set up with an opportunity to put the game away and weren't able to get first downs and put points on the board?
It's very frustrating. I think, you know, in this game you want to have the special teams, the defense and the offense all help each other and complement each other out there. And I felt like, you know, the defense, you know, did their job and got turnovers. It's we got to learn how to not lose the game before we can learn how to win games. And, you know, I felt like we let them off the hook. And, you know, anything, you know, bad that could have happened offensively in that last 4 minutes or whatever it was, happened. And, you know, we got to figure it out. I mean, nobody's going to be there to help us figure it out. We have to figure it out because that's not okay.
Your quarterback struggling. Interceptions are coming. You can tell clearly at the end of the game, after the last interception, he just comes right in the locker room. How do you kind of get him back on track and get the belief back in himself, by himself, and also with the team?
I think that you know, as a team, you know, he's our leader, you know, and we're behind him. And, you know, I think that he knows that. I think that he's, you know, dealing with something now, and he has to fight his way out. And we're going to be there to help him fight out. At the end of the day, when we get between those lines, we have to go out there and ball. You know, nobody else is going to help us do that. And I think that, you know, if we lean on each other, we'll be able to figure it out.
All right. Thank you, Mercedes.
Appreciate it.
There's Mercedes Lewis in the Jaguars locker room, very much emotional Mercedes Lewis, who's been around here for 11 seasons now and is trying to see this thing through, but this is far from seeing it through right now, guys, and that's the That's the reason, Fred, for all the emotion from Mercedes there. I mean, it's a lot of self-inflicted things, as he said.
This is true. I heard from when I was up top, he called the guys together on the sideline to try and, you know, rally them and get them going. And I understand his pain. I understand what he was going through. And basically, you know, what he said was we have to find a way not to lose. We have to learn how not to lose. Mm-hmm. And for me, it goes back to the penalties. We got a lot of young guys. You got to understand in certain situations, you know, the fouler play, the unsportsmanlike was 57-yard miss, end up a 42-yard make. Yeah. And that's the difference in the ball game, point-wise. So you have to find a way, as Mercedes said, not to shoot yourself in the feet. And then you'll give yourself a better opportunity to win those games.
Let's go back in the Jaguars locker room. Jeff Lagerman has Tashaun Gibson. Jeff.
Thank you, JP. Tashaun, a frustrating loss with an opportunity there at the end of the ball game for your all's offense to kind of take control of the ball game with the interceptions that you guys were able to get. How frustrating is that as a team?
I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 10 because of the preparation. And this is kind of was a bounce-back week for us. And I think that we came out, we did everything that we had to do until towards the end of the game. And I think that things got a little out of hand, a little sloppy. And they was able to come out there and win the game. And I think that that's the difference between good teams and that's the difference between, you know, elite teams. And I think that they just found a way to come back and make plays and win that football game. And it's tough because we felt like we definitely should have capitalized on some of the mistakes. And, you know, it's just unfortunate, but, you know, never here to play the blame game. It's just that offensively, defensively, and special teams, we all had a hand in this loss. And we just got to come back and move forward, man. 0-3 is tough. And moving forward, we just got to know that we got to get better and try to get ourselves out of this hole.
Quarterback is struggling. You know, good teams don't ever point fingers. Is that what this locker room will do going forward?
You know, you definitely can't point fingers. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, there's going to be times like this where, you know, there's been games, you know, if you look at the Green Bay game where he's the reason why we stayed in that game. You know, the defense made stops when we needed to, but Blake played, you know, amazing game. And, you know, that's just the nature of this business. You know, when you lose, the quarterback takes the blame. When you win, the quarterback gets all the glory. And I think that, you know, nobody points fingers at him. I respect him, man, and I love his game. And, you know, I'm excited that he's my quarterback. But I think that he knows that some of the plays he won't back. But, like I said, it's a collective thing. You know, defensive. If we don't get an offside penalty when it's he misses the field goal, and you know we win the game by 3 points. So you know you can't put everything, all the onus on the offense or the quarterback, because at the end of the day we all had a hand in this, and you know we just didn't get the job done, and you know it's unfortunate.
All right, thank you, Tashaun.
No problem.
Tashaun Gibson in the locker room there. The difference between good and elite teams, can't point fingers. That's where this team is right now. Can't point fingers.
I mean, are we deciding whether they're a good or an elite team?
No,
right now?
That's what he just said.
I understand. I'm trying to wonder.
He was trying to be optimistic, but yes. I mean, I really think they need to, you know, maybe check him into the concussion protocol because Blake did not play well.
No,
I heard that comment too.
Guys try to protect their guys.
I understand that, but you know it's part of it. But it starts with being accountable. You know, you don't want to throw the guy under the bus.
Right.
But at the same time, you can't be unrealistic. He has to be realistic, and the play across the board. You know,
if so many different areas are breaking down, I mean, is the ultimate biggest issue coaching or getting these guys mentally prepared to play on a weekly? Because the penalties are as much a mental thing as anything. I think they're not all penalties of aggression that we're seeing out there.
They aren't. But you have to understand, I always go back to, especially after my 2 years away from here, my last 2 years, it's about situational football. You know, these guys, they're a lot of young guys, so maybe the coaches are spending too much time teaching them what they already should know, such as the plays. You get paid. This is your job. You're supposed to know your handbook, your rule book. You're supposed to know all of that. And then once you go and you continuous repetition on all the different aspects of the game. You know, what to expect in coverage. At this point in the game, it's 2nd and 8. You're up by 5. You know, what are we going to get here? So you got to break down each situation and give your guys an opportunity to excel when those situations come because they've already seen those. I don't believe in wasting a lot of time. Run this play over. You're supposed to know what you're supposed to do. Now let's just go and focus on this actual situation when we might get this play. And we'll do that a few times a week throughout practice. So when the game comes, you know exactly what they're going to run. And as soon as they run it, you light up. You go, this is cheating. And that's what you're supposed to do.
We'll come back. Lightning fast questions coming up for you, Fred. The Jags fall today in week three, 19-17. The Jaguars are 0-3 on the season. And this is Jaguars postgame on the Jaguars Radio Network. X1 from Xfinity will change the way you experience sports. With the X1 Sports app, you can track stats and scores on your TV while watching another game live. Xfinity, the future of awesome. Final score, far from awesome today. 19-17, the Ravens over the Jags. Baltimore now 3-0, and the Jags fall to 0-3. It's time now for the Comcast Xfinity Lightning Fast Questions of the Game for Fred Taylor, brought to you by Xfinity, your home for the most live sports. Number one. The performance of Blake Bortles today. What is going on with Blake?
I think you stumped me, JP. I don't know. We're all looking for answers, man. But I believe that Blake will keep fighting, and then eventually find a way to put it together. It starts with a soft coach defense next week, I think.
Fred, defense wasn't perfect today. Question two, though, is this a defensive performance that they can build on?
Oh, without a doubt. They were great on third downs. I think it was three for 13 stop. On third down, they got the turnovers, they got the sacks. Got to find a way to close out.
Finally, Fred, next for this team, the Colts in London. What's this week going to be like for the Jaguars in this building coming off this loss, though?
I mean, I think they go back and honestly look at the film. And they look at how critical those penalties were at the time when those penalties occurred. You want to hurry up and with a sense of urgency, have a sharp week of practice, get to the Colts week for the game, and get rid of this taste out of your mouth.
There you have it, the Comcast Xfinity Lightning Fast Questions and Answers from Fred Taylor. Hate to stump you there with the first one on Blake, but I mean, it's year three for him. It's the second year in the offense, but is it too early still to call it a regression of mechanics and all that, or is that where we are with him? What do you think, guys?
It's a regression in play. I don't know if it's a regression in mechanics. You know, I don't know how important it is down in, down out that you're picture perfect throwing the football, Fred. A lot of guys have been effective with less than, you know, perfect spirals in their careers. But certainly in terms of productivity, at least last year when you had all the turnovers, he was offsetting that with basically twice as many touchdowns he was producing. So far this year, it's been more about the turnovers, and it seems to me like it's getting in his head a little bit. Like you said, maybe he's not trusting the line, but I see a guy who doesn't look comfortable in the pocket right now.
It doesn't seem that he's comfortable. He's still staying in there. You know, he's not just bailing out, running out. He's big, tough, strong kid, and he's attempting to try to make the throws. Last year, the receivers also caught a lot of those balls that he squeezed in there, and you don't really see him making those clutch catches as they were, you know, a year ago. So I don't want to jump the gun too much. It's the third game. Obviously, we all want to see him play better and minimize the turnovers and take care of the ball a lot more. And I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to hope it starts for Blake next week.
The run game could help that, too. Geez. And we'll get to that.
He's led the team in rushing 2 weeks in a row.
That's not a good thing.
I know.
For a Jaguars team that wants to run the ball. Well, we'll get your thoughts on that coming up. We'll come back, though, with highlights still to come. Final Everbank stats check. Final score 19-17. The Ravens over the Jags in week three. And this is Jaguars Radio. Jaguars postgame is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center in Jacksonville, where exceptional is affordable. Final score, Ravens 19, Jaguars 17. The Ravens now 3-0, Jags fall to 0-3. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, and pride of the Jaguars running back Fred Taylor from the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. It's time to listen to the highlights of this ball game. This fourth quarter was back and forth, by the way. We'll get to that coming up. It started, though, with a little defense early in this game. Neither side could get anything going. A punt fest through the first two drives for each side. Then the Ravens got on the board. They drive down the field, a 12-yard play, 13-yard play, 23-yard pass, all three in a row. It ended up an 8-play drive, 75 yards. Flacco with the wheels for the touchdown.
Second and goal from the 7-yard line for Baltimore. 4:10 to play in the first quarter. There is no score here in Jacksonville. Two left, one right for Flacco. Four-man front for the Jags. Flacco drops, looks, still looking. Now he rolls to his left. He tries to stay behind the line, still looks. Now he's going to run it. He runs for the corner. He's going to run it into the end zone for the touchdown.
Touchdown Ravens. The ensuing drive for Jacksonville. Blake Bortles intercepted.
First down now from the 44. 2:18 to play in the first. In a 7-0 game, the Ravens lead it. Under center this time is Bortles. Two tight ends set, receivers to either side. Blake fakes, looks to throw, looking deep downfield, fires it out to the left side, and that ball is going to be picked off. Dropping into coverage was the linebacker who picked it off.
It was C.J. Mosley, the ensuing drive field goal for Baltimore, 10-0. A little later, though, in the half, after the Jags had 16 plays, 42 yards in the first quarter, they got in the end zone finally. A punt return started. Rashad Green sparked the Jaguars' short field. Bortles to A-Rob for the score.
Allen Robinson to the right. Allen Hurns to the left. Both tight ends are on the left for now. Under center is Bortles. Ivory the running back. Second and goal from the three. Hurns motions to the right now. Play fake. Rolling right is Bortles. Fires to the corner of the end zone. That ball is caught for the touchdown by Allen Robinson.
Allen Robinson with his first score of the day. Ensuing drive for Baltimore. Tucker missed from over 50, but a leverage call on Dante Fowler Jr. gave him another chance. 42-yarder good at the horn. 13-7 at half. Then in the second half, a field goal for Baltimore made it 16-7. First Jaguars drive ends with another Bortles to A-Rob connection for six.
First down Jacksonville at the 11. 16-7 game, under center is Bortles. Yeldon, the running back, dropping the throw. Throws it to the right side, wants Allen Robinson in the corner of the end zone. Allen leaps. Did he come down with it? They're checking to see. They're still checking to see. There's no signal yet. Now they call it incomplete.
They ended up overturning the call after a lengthy review. It's a touchdown, 11-yard score, 16-14. Baltimore with the lead. Then it starts to get crazy. The Jaguars punted away a couple of drives later. A muffed punt for Baltimore, recovered by Denard Robinson, set up a Myers field goal. It made it 17-16. Next drive for Baltimore. Jalen Ramsey tipped it, intercepted by Tashawn Gibson. Ensuing drive for Jacksonville, intercepted by Tavon Young. The other way, Ravens with the ball, down by one, and Paul Posluszny comes through with a pick.
Second down, shotgun for Flacco. 3:30 to play in the ball game. Four-man front, dropping the throw is Flacco. Throws it to the middle. That ball is going to be in the air. And did Paul Posluszny come down with it? Did he pick it off? Did Puz pick that one off? I believe he did.
He certainly did. Dante Fowler with the pressure got to the arm of the quarterback. Then Myers lines up for a field goal try from 52 yards.
Here we go. It's going to be a 52-yard field goal. 3:06 to play from right in front of the goalpost. Jason Myers, a 52-yard attempt. Nortman gets it down. It is blocked. It was kicked low, and the Ravens are going to try and pick it up and return it. They're still on their feet. It was hit, kicked low and into the line. It was mishit by Myers. The Ravens are going to return it past their own 40-yard line.
Blocked field goal. Set up the Ravens on a short field. Tucker from 53 in the lead.
This is a 53-yarder, 1:07 to play, 1:07. The Jags will get it back if he makes it.
And you do not want to ice him. You want to save that timeout.
From the right hash, from 53 yards away, Justin Tucker. He kicks it up. Tucker's kick is good. And it would have been good from 63.
19-17 the score. Jags have a chance, though. They have the ball. Unfortunate sack on second down, and here comes the end of the game.
26 seconds, no timeout. Third down and 21. Dropping the throw is Bortles. Looking, fires it deep down the middle of the field, wants Allen Hurns, and it's going to be intercepted. It was tipped and picked off by the Ravens. They slide down. Zach Orr picks it off, and the Ravens are going to come into Jacksonville and beat the Jaguars. 19-17.
That's how it happened today. By the way, the Bud Light play of the game, the second A-Rob touchdown, the nice catch in the corner that was overturned. The Bud Light play of the game brought to you by Bud Light, who reminds fans to stay in the game and drink responsibly. A lot of momentum swings in that fourth quarter, interceptions both ways. We'll come back. More from Fred Taylor, Mike Dempsey. We've got an EverBank stats check to get to, the injury report, all that and more. It's 19-17, the final. Ravens over the Jags in week three, and it's Jaguars postgame on the Jaguars Radio Network. Jaguars postgame continues. Final score, 19-17. Ravens over the Jaguars. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, Fred Taylor, and it's now time for an EverBank final stats check. We start with the team statistics. Baltimore led the way in first downs, 18-14. Third downs today, Baltimore only 3 of 13 offensively on third down, 6 for 16 for the Jaguars offense. Total net yardage today, 283 for the Ravens, 216 for the Jags. The rushing net, Fred, cover your ears here. 84 rushing yards for Baltimore, 48 on the ground for the Jags today. Passing, 199 to 168 in favor of the Ravens. Penalties, 8 for 58 for Baltimore, 7 for 75 yards for the Jaguars in key situations, as you said earlier, Fred, to keep drives moving and such. And, you know, of course, the turnover battle today. Well, each side turned it over three times in that wild fourth quarter, but key interceptions for Blake Bortles and the Jaguars today. There's your team stats.
Yeah, and Blake Bortles had the 194 yards passing on 24-38 with those three interceptions. Did throw a couple of touchdowns to Allen Robinson. Joe Flacco on the other side, 214 through the air. Did not throw one, but did run for a touchdown. Also was intercepted twice, one each by Paul Posluszny and Tashaun Gibson for the Jags. Unfortunately, Bortles tied for the rushing lead for this team because it was with only 17 yards. Three carries, 17 yards today. T.J. Yeldon, 6 for 17. Chris Ivory, 12 carries, netted a total of 14 yards. So not any holes being opened up in the running game. Terrence West led the way on the ground for Baltimore with 45 yards on 10 carries. Jacksonville receiving, Allen Robinson, in addition to the touchdowns, had 7 total catches for 57 yards on 11 targets today. So they did make a more concerted effort to get him the football. Marquise Lee with 5 grabs for 44. Allen Hurns with 4 for 40. Julius Thomas, very quiet day, only 2 catches for 13 yards. Steve Smith, senior, leading the way for Baltimore. 8 grabs for 87 on 11 targets. Defensively, Paul Posluszny, 10 solo tackles and a pair of assists to go with his interception. Jonathan Cyprian, 9 solos and an assist today. And Telvin Smith seemed like he had more. He had 7 total tackles, including 6 solos. Just seemed like he was all around the ball today. I thought Jalen Ramsey looked very active as well. He was credited with 5 total tackles, and he had the big deflection that led to the interception.
Mr. Taylor, how do you improve in the run game? It's a very broad question, but maybe you have a pointed answer.
JP, it starts up front. It always starts up front. I mean, running backs can be exceptional and only do so much. You know, if a play breaks down and you have a very good running back, he might be able to churn out some positive yardage. You know, but if you don't get anything up front from the offensive line, it's going to have a long day. And the fact that you're not executing on third downs, you don't give yourself an opportunity to call those run plays. It's, you know, you tend to find yourself, or the coordinator tends to find himself behind the gun. He's always in a rush. Got to get it. Got to make up for this. Got to make up for that. So they're not able to sustain no drives. The penalties, they never help. Very deflating. And I think what you're going to see is a team that as a player throughout my entire career, anytime you start a game, you have momentum, and then all of a sudden the penalty knocks it out, this takes it away, that's frustrating. And now you're looking all around. And, you know, you don't really trust the guy that's, you know, next to you. I think a little bit of that is starting to set in with these guys.
That's not a good start.
No, I'll give you the layman's outlook on it. I've never run the ball. Mike, you may be surprised to learn, in the National Football League, there are no holes for these running backs. Oh. That's exactly what Fred was saying.
I always used to beg the guys, just give me a crease.
Just give them a crease. Fred, I'm not seeing anything. I mean, I'm not saying TJ and Chris Ivory are making the best, you know, making the right decision on every cut, but man, it doesn't seem like
they're pretty
much
close
of a chance.
I'm paying close attention to that. Right. They're pretty close. It's really nowhere to go.
Right, there's guys on him immediately.
Chris probably missed one cut early on in the game, but he did. I think it was a 6-yard gain, though.
There you have it. The run game, a struggle today. A few other things, a struggle still for the Jags, though. 19-17 the final. Ravens over the Jaguars. PRI Productions has everything you need to bring your next event to life. If you want people to come together, you want PRI. Visit PRIProductions.com to learn more. We'll pick a player of this game. We'll also look at the injury report coming up. Ravens are 3-0. Jags are 0-3 after a 19-17 Ravens win in Week 3 at EverBank Field. It's Jaguars postgame on Jaguars Radio. Jaguars postgame rolls along. J.P. Shadrick with Mike Dempsey and Fred Taylor. 19-17 in a wild back-and-forth fourth quarter. Well, not scoring-wise, but possession-wise, let's say. And the Jags fell short today. They fall to 0-3. So let's, gentlemen, pick a player of the game for the Jaguars today. The voting procedure, I get one. Mike gets one. Fred, you get one and a half, just to break any ties we might have. I guess I'll go first today. Why not?
Sure, why not?
It's a guy who was covered up last week and had a struggle getting open and had a couple of catches here or there. Nothing huge, though. But for a guy who's supposed to be your number one receiver, he's going to be covered up all year long. Today, targeted 11 times, 7 catches, 57 yards, and a pair of touchdowns, I present as my nominee for player of the game, Allen Robinson.
I think that's a pretty reasonable case there for Allen Robinson. Clearly, Fred on the offensive side. But I'm going to put the onus on Fred Taylor, so I'm going to split the vote here with you. I thought Paul Posluszny today, you know, did a really good job. Came up with the interception, which was a key play in the fourth quarter, and really was all over it, just piling up tackles, particularly early in this football game. Ravens never really felt like they had much going in the screen game or in the running game today, and I think that was a lot to do with Paul Posluszny. 12 total tackles, 10 solos today, Fred. He is my nominee for player of the game.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to go with Paul as well. I mean, he gave the team an opportunity to win with the interception there late in the game, along with everything you said, Mike. I thought he was outstanding. He led the team, been captain, flying around, and you put your team in a position to win the game. Because most linebackers don't catch that ball. He jumped in front of the guy, went around, made that play when they needed it. He just couldn't capitalize.
You know, for as much clamoring, and I understand it, for Miles Jack to get on the field from the fan base, right? Today, I don't think it was one of those days. Telvin and Paul Posluszny, I thought both played very well today. Telvin probably put together as strong a three-game stretch as any player on this team to open the season.
Yeah, that's fair. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's going to be clamoring for Jack because people want the new linebacker on the field.
I sense disagreement.
No, I totally agree. But I also remember the last time the fans around here started saying, this is what we want, this is what we want, and when they got it, it didn't turn out the way it should have. I mean, I don't want to go back and open up that can, but you know what I mean.
I do understand you.
Whatever do you mean, Fred?
I mean, we need a player's coach around here.
Oh, all that stuff.
Then two Super Bowls later, they regret
asking
for a player's coach.
There you have it. There's the player of the game, Paul Posluszny, the Jaguars Radio Network player of the game, with 12 total tackles today and a big interception late in this game, but the Jags fall 19-17. The injury report is coming up, and a little later we'll preview next week's game at Wembley Stadium, London. The Colts are next on the docket for the Jaguars. It's Jaguars postgame on Jaguars Radio. Jaguars postgame continues. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, Fred Taylor after a 19-17 final. Ravens over the Jags. Baltimore 3-0. Jacksonville 0-3. This injury report is presented by Baptist Health System, changing healthcare for good. A few names popped up today, but a couple of those went back in the game. Ivory had a knee injury at one point, but was back in pretty quickly. Dan Scuda with a hamstring injury, but he was back in the ball game. Hayes Pollard with an ankle sprain. Devon House, who came down with an illness yesterday, was cramping up throughout the game, it seemed like, towards the end, and at one point threw up on the field, it was reported here. So good luck to Devon House there. Those are the only names that I remember coming across during the broadcast. Mike, any others pop out to you? I think
those were the ones that we were paying attention to. And
we'll keep an eye on Jared Odrick this week to see if he can get back. Kelvin Beachum, will he be ready for next week? That's a big question. What's the status of Brandon Linder on the offensive line moving forward?
It's hard to tell, to me at least, Fred, if there was a drop-off in offensive line play because they haven't been able to run the ball in any game this year. You know what I mean? Certainly, you want Beecham back. You definitely want Linder back. You know how good Linder is.
Yeah, you want your starters out there.
Of course you do. Right. Of course you do. I just don't know if that was, like, being without them, if you point to that and say, boy, if we had only had them today, it would have made the difference here or there in the outcome.
No, just looking at it, I thought they played solid for at least three quarters. No sacks in the first half. Mm-hmm. No pressure. I think the only real pressure came was when Yeldon, he should have been a little bit more stout against the safety there on the safety blitz that led to the interception early on. But, I thought they did okay. They could do much better in the run game, but in the pass game for three quarters they played very good.
We'll see what happens this week around Everbank Field, getting ready for the trip to London. We'll preview that when we come back. One final segment to go on Jaguars postgame final score, 19-17. Ravens over the Jags. This is Jaguars postgame on the Jaguars Radio Network. Final moments of Jaguars postgame after the final of 19-17 at Everbank Field. Ravens over the Jags. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, Fred Taylor. We will take this show on the road next week. Actually, it's a home game at Wembley Stadium, London. The Indianapolis Colts and the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jags open up AFC South play. The Colts are 0-2 entering today, but they're leading against the San Diego Chargers as we speak. That game is in Indianapolis. So before we get to that game and that matchup, it starts within this building this week. We've said this the last 2 weeks, though, Fred. At some point, it's got to change. Something's got to happen, right? Or improve or something.
I mean, that's why they're here. That's why they practice. That's why they go to meetings. It's not an easy game. But, you know, I think the younger guys got to dial in. You know, I think the veteran guys, they everyone has to, you know, get in front of each other and look each other in the eye and say, look, we have to be accountable to one another. Because I'm sure there's some horse playing going on. And even when I was here, I would see different young guys. I was a young guy that tried to pull wool over people's eyes. Mm-hmm. But fortunately for me, I was able to produce on the field. But it happens. You know, some guys that you're depending on, they're just not, you know, it's not translating into good play on the field. And instead, they're taking a step back with the penalties. And for me, the big thing for me are the penalties. You know, it has something to do with execution. But at the same time, they're not just obviously dropping balls. Just, you know, Blake isn't getting sacked 6-7 times a game like those, you know, it's happened in the past before. Yeah. So I think if they can find a way to minimize those penalties, generate that momentum, keep drives going, inflate themselves as opposed to deflate when things don't go your way, I think they'll be fine.
I think they've got to open it up on offense a little bit because clearly I understand what they're trying to do and remain balanced, but this is headed towards looking like an offense like we had here last year where you really couldn't run the ball, yet you know what? When they just threw the ball down the field, that's where they had their most success. I'm not saying you have to go five wide the whole game, but I think they need to be more aggressive pushing it down the field. I think it showed up, you know, late in the game when you're already in field goal range and you're trying to burn some clock with a running game that you know hasn't gone anywhere all day, and you ended up setting yourself up in a third and long situation, and Blake takes a sack, and now all of a sudden you're talking about a much more difficult field goal attempt. So it'd be great if they could get the running game going, Fred. I don't see any signs that they're close to a breakthrough there. I think they need to be more aggressive driving the ball down the field.
You would take a chance with opening it up, going three and out, then, you know, you're sacrificing defense if you aren't sustaining drives. But I do agree with you. I really do agree with you. I like to see more screens. You know, more today I thought they got a little bit more creative as opposed to just throwing the deep ball to A-Rob. They were able to, you know, bring him underneath on a few shallow routes, allow him to use his big body to get open. And it's all about 4 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards, sustaining drives. I like to see Blake on the edge a little bit more. Haven't seen him.
Maybe move him
a little bit more. Haven't seen as much as that compared to his first two years at the position. Got to get back to the drawing board. Whatever it takes, man. Find a way. Scrap, trick plays. You know, a few shots. Try to get a few pass interference calls in there. Just got to find a way to bring that first win home. And hopefully they'll come in bunches.
30 penalties now for the Jags, 247 yards.
That's a lot.
In three games.
That's a lot.
It's going to be near the top in the league. It's already second most in the league entering this week. So next week, it's a 2:30 London time kickoff. That's 9:30 in the morning in Jacksonville on the East Coast. That means that we'll be on the air on the network at 8:30 with a countdown to kickoff. And the Jags and the Colts kick it off at Wembley Stadium, London, trying for another win at Wembley. They got it last year against the Bills, and they'll try to do it again. So we'll take part of the show on the road next week. So well done, guys. Fred, we'll talk to you in London.
Of course, man. Get that divisional win. I think it could spark something.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
I'll see Freddie when Oakland comes in. I think it's the next time the Jags are here in Everbank, October 23rd.
It's a ways away because London.
Only game in Everbank until November 13th.
Yeah.
Think of that.
A lot of college games in that span.
No, right. Only Jaguars game here Everbank.
So the Jags fall today. Final score 19-17. Well done, guys. Fred, we'll talk to you. Mike, I'll talk to you in just a moment.
You got it.
That. Our Senior VP of Communications is Dan Edwards. Jags Manager of Radio is Joe Fortunato. Tony Smith and Linda Fortunato, producers. Max Hochman produces Jaguars.com in Jaguars postgame. For Fred Taylor, Jeff Loggeman, and Mike Dempsey, this is J.P. Shadrick saying goodnight. Final score, Ravens 19, Jags 17. The Jaguars fall to 0-3. This is Jaguars postgame on the Jaguars Radio Network.
This is the Jaguars Scoreboard Show. Jaguars Scoreboard Show. J.P. Shadrick and Mike Dempsey look back at today's Jaguars game, as well as the rest of the NFL. The Jaguars Scoreboard Show is brought to you by Brooks Rehabilitation, Farrah and Farrah, Geico, Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank. The Jaguars Scoreboard Show begins right now.
Yes, the Scoreboard Show begins right now. The final score, 19-17. Ravens over the Jags in Week 3. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, Fred Taylor's out of here. The reaction, I think we might get a lot of a repeat of last week's reaction, to be quite honest with you. The Jags faltered and couldn't do a lot on the offense consistently today. Turned the ball over three times in key situations, but the defense got the ball back in a couple of key situations and kept the Jaguars in this game today. Some positive on that front. But at the end of the day, it's a 19-17 loss, and it's a football team that I don't think anybody around here expected would have even thought 0-3.
No, not realistically with all the additions that they made this offseason. At least I didn't think that was going to be a realistic expectation. And now you're staring at the Colts, who are up right now in San Diego 10-3 early on. They're trying to get their season back together as well. JP, and we're already way too early in the season to be in scoreboard watching mode, right, in the AFC South. But you're in that a little bit, like how you don't want to fall too far behind. You know, you watch this game, and like you said, the bottom line, all these things we can point to, the bottom line is a loss, right? It's 19-17 is the final score. They scored more than you. You're 0-3. As I was watching the fourth quarter, I was, you know, making notes as I do throughout the game, thinking, man, there are just so many things if they pull this game out that I'm just not going to be happy with. And I thought, you know, stop that. What did you say in the pregame? Win by any fashion.
Yes.
And if you had walked out of here with that win today, we could point to the resiliency of the defense, time and again having to be called upon to deliver. The offense doing just enough. There's so many things, but it didn't go that way, you know. And some critical mistakes at some critical times. I understand what Fred's saying because the penalties have permeated this entire season, starting at the first game of the preseason. They just have not stopped. But I really thought in a couple of crucial situations, Blake Bortles has to have better pocket presence. You can't take the sack on 3rd and 10.
Yeah, awareness, situational awareness.
Right, that's what he's talking about.
Absolutely.
Too, right? In this situation, what is the one thing you can't do? And certainly the last one. You thought he was going down the pocket. He makes a brilliant move to get out of there. He runs out. That clock's got to be ticking in your head. He's trying to turn his shoulders. There's clearly nobody open because he's not getting rid of the ball, and he allows himself to be tracked down from behind. You just got to sail that one out of bounds. You're well outside the pocket. Not only you cost yourself time, you cost yourself yardage, yeah, you cost yourself your final timeout. And at that point, the game was effectively over, barring a miracle, and they were not going to get one for the second year in a row.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351 is the number if you want to get in with us. We'll be here until about 6 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
And answering questions and taking calls and talking Ravens-Jags. By the way, the divisional game, since we're scoreboard watching
sure.
now.
Why not?
Of course, Thursday night, the Texans got blown out by the Patriots 27-0. So the Texans are now 2-1. The Titans lost today. Raiders beat them 17-10 in Nashville. So the Titans are now 1-2, and the Colts were 0-2 entering today, and they are leading, as you said a moment ago, 10-3 the score there.
Yeah, so many things we can point to, and we'll talk to folks and see what's really on their mind, who or what are the biggest culprits in this loss today. But there was some irony at the end of the first half, as you feel like you've got them stopped. You feel like you had them stopped a couple of times.
Absolutely.
On that drive. You did. Malik Jackson with the hands to the face. That'll happen sometimes. Dante Fowler getting called for in sportsmanlike for leverage on the missed field goal attempt. And the irony of the Ravens getting 3 points on an untimed down at the end of a half, which is how the Jags won the game against them last year. And the final margin is 2 points. So, you know, it didn't happen at the very end of the game. And I don't even know if they were thinking about that at that point. But certainly similar in some ways to how the Jags were able to steal one last year.
No doubt about that. And an unfortunate way. It stinks when it goes the other way, when it goes against
you. What? It stinks if when you lose, period.
Yeah,
and in that fashion, yeah, to have that one, because you did feel like you had some momentum in there. You know, you got the punt return by Rashad Green. Might have been the biggest single play of the game for the Jacksonville Jaguars, because they had nothing going on offense at that point.
If they don't get that, they're not going to move the ball more than they moved it 37 yards to get to that touchdown.
Right, I mean, and
but
they did.
They're not moving 75.
That kind of gave them a little juice, though. I think getting
absolutely.
Set up with good field position.
Still, and it takes one play
right.
a lot of times.
You score, it's a 3-point game at that point. Not that a 6-point game put you out of it, but you knew the Ravens were getting the ball first in the second half as well. So, you know, on and on it goes. That's where they are right now.
Phone lines open, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We'll take your calls when we return. This is the Scoreboard Show on Jaguars Radio.
The Jaguars Scoreboard Show, continues right now.
19-17, final score, Ravens over the Jags in Week 3. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, the Scoreboard Show continues. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. I hesitate because I'm pretty much at a loss. We're trying to figure out how this thing is turned south this quickly.
Sounds like Blake Bortles is at a loss, too, in the post-game press conference. So we're being passed along some quotes coming out of there, basically saying, paraphrasing, this may not be word for word, but if we knew what we were doing wrong, we wouldn't be doing it.
That's the exact quote.
Right? Okay, I got it. Yep. On the money then. But in other words, they're mystified as well. I think we could point to a lot of things that are not working, you know, as to whether or not what the exact cause is. I don't know. I think they should know why they're not able to run the ball. You know what I mean? Are they just getting beat one-on-one like Tony and Jeff were talking about a lot in the pregame today? Are you winning your one-on-one matchups up front? Is it something where you're not recognizing when teams are run blitzing? I don't know. I don't know what it is, JP, but we can see the end result, what's not working there. They've got to be able to figure out the components that go into making that work. They didn't figure it out all last year, though, and they're off to a bad start in that department once again.
Gus Bradley in his press conference, we just didn't do enough good things today. It sounds like a broken record a little bit, and it is, end quote, for Gus Bradley. Jalen Ramsey has called out Steve Smith Sr., good player, but doesn't respect him as a man. That'll be a headline grabber, of course, after, he had a great day, Steve Smith did. There's a lot of quotes coming out, but the one that matters is the final score, 19-17. And
right.
Unfortunately, it's gone the wrong way for the third straight week.
Well, let's get some Jaguar fans' quotes on what their thoughts are on where things stand right now at 0-3 at 355-NFL-1. We're going to begin the Scoreboard Show with Evan up first today. Hi, Evan. How are you?
Doing good, man. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. What's on your mind, man?
I was going to give you guys my own good, bad, and ugly. I thought the secondary played pretty good. They didn't give up a big play. And I thought Ramsey played pretty well. He was pretty physical. Cyprian looked pretty physical in there. So I was at least happy with that. I know at 0-3 you don't want to hear the super good, but that's what I liked.
Yeah.
But the run game and the coaching, man, that just I feel like that's what killed us. I don't want to blame it on the backups because it hasn't been good so far. And then just the penalties, you know. I mean, what else can you blame that on besides coaching? That's really all I got to say. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Thank you.
A good point about the defense. I mean, they held them to 19, and there were they took the ball away three times today.
Right. I thought the defense played well enough to win, put it that way, right?
They put them in a position to win, in fact.
You hold a team to under 20 points in the NFL, that's pretty good in today's NFL. Now, they did get away with one. Mike Wallace just flat-out dropped the touchdown today. Josh Johnson didn't break that pass up. He just dropped it. But, you know, that's going to happen. You drop passes occasionally. It wasn't like Wallace was behind the secondary and Flacco missed him three or four times, and you're just, oh, my gosh, we can't cover this guy. He wasn't a big factor today, you know. So, I agree with that. The secondary did play well, and it's fine. You know what? I think it's fine for them to point it out. I think a lot of times when we sit here and point out there are some positives in the negative, people feel like you're trying to whitewash Yakko. No, nobody's whitewashing anything. It's 0-3. They lost. Nothing's good. No. You know, that overwhelms anything good that comes out of it. Doesn't mean when you evaluate the play of each individual that some guys did not have good games. Certainly they did.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Much better than last week, but not enough to get a W.
That's the problem right now.
Right. Let's move along to Chris next up here on the Scoreboard Show. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, man? What's on your mind?
Hey, listen, the defense played good enough to win today, but at some point the offense has to match the defense play, and it's ridiculous because, you know, Coach Gus Bradley, he's talking about, you know, get better every week and all this stuff, but it's like they don't get better. It's like you got to like learn from your mistakes. They don't learn from their mistakes whatsoever. They do the same stuff. The defense played good today. I'll give them that. And then the offense just, you know, kind of craps the bed. Is it coaching or what is it, man? Somehow you just got to, like, figure out how to win. Like, what's going on right now?
Ultimately, the buck all stops with coaching, right? I mean, ultimately, right?
Yes.
A cumulative effect, because certainly players can be gotten rid of, but you're not going to get rid of an entire side of the football. I think the ironic thing is, JP, we came into the season feeling like, well, at least we know the offense is pretty good, right? I mean, Blake threw 35 touchdowns last year. If we can run the ball at all this year, wow, could this offense be something special? And now it's the defense with all these new faces that at least for two out of the three games, and granted, Green Bay scored 27 points in the first game, but Aaron Rodgers threw for under 200 yards. It wasn't a horrible defensive performance by any stretch of the imagination. Today was a pretty solid defensive performance, but you know, last week nobody played well in any aspect.
If they're the same mistakes that are creeping up and the coaches each week say, hey, don't do that, and they still do that, whose fault is it?
Well, that's a difficult question, right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes
that's where we are right
but,
now.
But in situational football, are you telling your quarterback, is the last thing you're telling your quarterback, hey, the last thing you can do here is take a sack, right? I don't know. Should he understand that
do
already?
Do you have to tell him that?
Maybe you do, because it happened twice in key situations late in this football game. Ultimately, if you're having guys that go out there making the same mistakes over and over again, it's up to the coaches to find a new guy, right? So they keep sending the same players out there, but then you've got the question of, are those guys that you're going to send in better than what you're sending out
there? You still got to put your best players
on
the field.
I get that.
So that's the trick to this thing.
I get that, but you know what? Bad play by players gets a lot of coaches fired eventually.
The
buck ultimately will stop with the coaching staff on this. I'm not saying the players played well. That certainly there's an aspect, I think, to both that bear responsibility when you have 30 penalties through three games after a preseason that was loaded with them. Let's get Jerry in before we break here on the Scoreboard Show. Hi, Jerry. How are you?
How are you?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
I just want to know why the national anthem and the flyover was blacked out on TV. I don't care about these rich a-holes.
All right, enough. That's enough. Cut them off. You know, Jerry, why don't you call a TV station and ask
them?
Yeah,
honestly,
how are JP and I supposed to know what the TV decided to do on TV?
Yeah, we're not CBS.
Yeah, break.
I don't know. I don't know.
I have no idea. We don't.
On
we're
that
not
note,
even. We don't even know that it's blacked out for all what's going on. So excellent call.
This is a great time to take a time out and think about it for a moment. Scoreboard Show, the phone lines are open, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Be better than that.
Please do.
We're not CBS.
Please do.
For the record.
If you have any questions about shortwave radio, we're not going to answer those either.
It's just the Scoreboard Show on Jaguars Radio.
The Jaguars Scoreboard Show continues right now.
Ravens over the Jags 19-17 in week 3. Jags are now 0-3 heading to London to face the Indianapolis Colts next Sunday. Colts are in action right now. 10-6 the score. Indianapolis with the lead at home over the San Diego Chargers, by the way. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, and you. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351, and it ain't pretty.
No, not pretty at 0-3, man. 0-3, I mean, 0-2 is bad enough. 1-2, and they find a way to win that game, you feel so dramatically different. At least I would feel so
Absolutely.
Different.
As good as 1-2 can feel, but considering what happened last week, 1-2 would be, I mean, fantastic right now.
Right, right. But that's where we stand. So let's get back out to the phone lines. JP, 355-6351, the number. Chris, you're next up here on the Scoreboard Show. How are you, Chris?
Am I on?
Yes.
You are. What's up?
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear the beat that normally happens. There's two questions I got to ask. Did you guys see that graphic that came up during the game with the teams with the most losses since holding the lead since 2014, I believe it is? Yeah.
I did not. We watch an in-house feed a lot of times that has no graphics on the screen whatsoever, so I did not see that.
CBS did a graphic that came up and it said the Jags have lost 16 games when leading a game since 2014. It leads the NFL. And then the other point I've got to make is more of a question. How do I balance the affection and the caring that I have for the team as an organization versus the product that has been placed in the field for the last 4 years? How do you know you balance it? You know, it's expensive for guys like myself and Irish Jaguar to come from the UK and Europe to Jacksonville to watch games and go to Wembley games, and we keep seeing nothing very good being played on the field. How do we balance that? And I'll take the comments off the air.
All right, thank you, Chris. I'll call. I will say that that's – I can't answer that.
That's a personal preference for each person.
Right. I mean, you know, JP, I come here every day, week. I don't need tickets. I buy season tickets anyway because I want to – support a franchise that is enabling me to have a nice living, you know, and so that's how I justify my expenditure, and I usually end up giving my tickets away to somebody every single week to make sure that they get used. You know what? There may come a point where I change my mind on that, but for right now, that's where I'm at. But I would never tell anyone it's your obligation to do one or the other, you know, to protest by not buying or to buy out of blind loyalty. I mean, that's the decision you have to make. Do you get something out of the experience of, you know, the communal experience of being a fan and being at these games and making those trips? If you feel like the expenditure outweighs what you get back, I guess that's something for you to decide.
Well, I know they've spent the last few years around here trying to enhance the experience outside of the white lines.
It's been voted one of the best game day experiences in the National Football League.
But now at some point you got to fix inside the white lines,
Absolutely.
Too. That's the last part of this equation right now. Everything else around here is awesome.
Well, would you trade all that for a 3-0 record right now? I mean, that's kind of, you know what
you
I
know?
Mean?
Yeah.
You know, or a 12-4 season, something like that. You know, you don't want to think too short term, but yeah, you know, we can't answer that one for you.
Nope.
You know, I'm sure a lot of people will struggle.
Everybody would
with
have
that.
A different answer for that.
Yeah. Christoph, thank you for the call, though, and always
we'll see you next
for the support
week,
from
the
across the pond. Let's get David up here next on the Scoreboard Show. What's up, David?
Afternoon. So it's 12:39 now. You know, the definition of insanity, you keep doing the same things, hoping for different results. So I guess, you know, the inevitable question is, you know, it starts with the head coach. If he makes that call, is that a David Caldwell call or is that a Conn call?
It's ultimately, you need, I think, the permission of the owner to make a move like that. That's ultimately a Shad Conn call. But typically, I mean, the general manager has wherewithal. I don't know. I put it this way. I wouldn't expect in this situation Dave Caldwell to make a move on Gus Bradley without clearing it with Shad Conn. That would be, right? I mean, but I don't know if that's the case in every city, JP. You know, GMs get hired with express consent to run the team the way they see fit and, you know, without interference. And I think it depends on different type situations. But I think ultimately that's a decision at the highest level.
Yeah, that would be a big decision in this organization's, you know, future. I mean, for the next few years. So I think that goes all the way. If that were to happen, it would have to go all the way to the top.
It would include, right. It would be.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, it would. And I think you'd probably have to have everybody. Look, all it takes is for Shad Khan to decide he wants to make a change in any regard. He owns the team. He can do whatever he wants in that regard, you know. But I think that would be more of a collective thing. And who knows what kind of conversations have gone on behind closed doors in terms of saying, hey, you know what, no matter what happens, are we going to let the season play out? He may have done, you know, had those conversations. We just don't know. So ultimately the head man's going to make that call.
Yeah.
Kevin, you're up next here on the Scoreboard Show. How are you?
Hey, guys. You know, there are penalties. There's effort penalties and there's selfish penalties. We had three selfish penalties today that undoubtedly cost us the game. The first one was the leverage call on Fowler. I mean, that is the same penalty whether you're in high school, college, and pros. He knows it's a penalty. He selfishly did it. The other penalty was when Ramsey, after Pozleski's interception, we could have had an interception plus a 15-yard penalty. He selfishly took a shot that he did not need to take. The third one is we had Flacco backed up to the 10 or 15. I honestly can't remember right now. And Fowler comes off the ball and puts his hand in the offensive player's face mask blatantly. I mean, as it was a grudge against that player, and selfishly got that penalty, which got him backed up. Those three plays, Pozlesny's interception, we could have kicked the field goal. No, we would have been in field goal range. The guy missed the field goal on the vaulting penalty, and we had Flacco backed up. And I'm just sick of this childish, and why Gus Bradley can't hold these guys more accountable is beyond me. Thank you, guys. I'm sorry.
All right, thank you. First of all, I don't agree with the characterization of all these penalties as being, quote, selfish penalties. Dante Fowler saying, you know what? I don't care about the consequences. Let me throw my hands to the face of this offensive lineman just because. I mean, what? There's no rationale where he's going to do that. Now, I agree with you. When a play's over and you get a piling on, some kind of unnecessary roughness, something like that, it's selfish in the regard that you're not thinking about your teammates. When Dante Fowler's rushing the quarterback and he gets his hands up, guys get hands to the face sometimes. Malik Jackson, did he selfishly hit Joe Flacco in the face? Because he extended a drive. They were off the field. They were done. Off the field, it was going to be fourth down. Baltimore right. would have been punting. I mean, no. From that standpoint, you can claim every penalty is – every offsides is selfish because you're trying to get a jump to pad your sack total or whatever the case may be. I don't agree with that characterization of selfishness. There are certain ones when you lose your cool, you're not thinking of – you're thinking about yourself and your personal beef. Fowler, hands to the face, it happens, man. These guys playing football – he's not what I mean, what is possibly the rationale for let me just try to push it, you know, I don't buy that.
Sometimes you can go too far, like you said, with the after the whistle stuff and all that that's happened before, you know, last week.
Right, Odric was that's to me that animal. Was a selfish act, right? It was all about him and the way he was frustrated. Know, and look, we're all frustrated, but
football happens and penalties happen in football.
They do. So, and some of them, I agree. Like the Rams, anytime if you have a turnover and then all of a sudden, you know, because there's some extracurricular stuff, the extracurricular garbage, you just need to swallow your pride sometimes, right, and not cost your team yardage. When you're going on a pass rush and you get hands to the face, yeah, it was a blatant one, but it happens in the NFL. It does. Guys' hands get slid up, and once they're there. Go make the play. I don't think Dante Fowler said, hey, watch, I'm going to go get this guy no matter what it costs me on this.
We'll come back and get more calls. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351, the number. The number today on the scoreboard, 19-17. Ravens over the Jaguars. The Scoreboard Show continues after this on Jaguars Radio.
I'm Michaela Bradley, wife of Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley. My husband is always prepared with a game day plan, and so am I. As a busy mom, I'm always looking for easy ways to save time. Publix helps me tackle everything from pregame prep to postgame cleanup with prices that are never out of bounds.
This week at Publix, assorted varieties of Tide Pods 26 to 35 count are on sale for $9.99.
Available at Publix, where shopping is a pleasure.
Hi folks, Frank Frangie here for the best barbecue in town. That's Bono's. And now it's the official barbecue of the Jacksonville Jaguars. All season long, you can get Bono's barbecue at 6 different locations in Everbank Field. You also get Bono's barbecue at 15 locations all around town with fast, friendly service, clean family restaurants, and that great, great taste of Bono's barbecue. If you want great barbecue, you want Bono's. And remember this, if there ain't a pit, it ain't legit. That's Bono's.
Follow the Jaguars nonstop when you fly from Jacksonville International Airport. Jax has convenient nonstop service to 5 away games in Chicago, Detroit, Houston, Nashville, and Indianapolis. Other Jaguars games in Buffalo, Kansas City, and San Diego are only one connection away. Touchdown with the Jaguars when you fly from Jax.
My name is Kelly Mullaney, and I'm a mother of 5 boys who all play high school sports. As a parent, I worry about them getting injured. Thanks to Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, I don't worry as much because they are at my son's school every day. Their certified athletic trainers are always looking out for the kids and helping to prevent injuries. If something happens, they are right there to provide immediate medical care, working as a team with the JOI doctors. Knowing that my kids get the same type of care as the Jaguars makes me rest a little easier at night.
Jaguars owner Shad Khan on creating the best customer experience.
Game day is special, and when the Jags take the field, we want every fan to have the best game day possible. That's why we partnered with Daly's. They even have 3 locations in the stadium. They know what makes for a great customer experience. From the kickoff kit program to the way they treat our fans at the game, it's like they say, it's nicer here. I can't think of a better game day partner. I also happen to like their coffee.
To experience what Shad's talking about, visit a Daly's at Everbank Field or any of our 26 Jacksonville locations.
The CSI Companies has been getting the people business right for more than 20 years in Jacksonville. CSI proudly opened their doors just as the Jaguars came to town. And they've been valuable business partners for some of Jacksonville's largest companies. Do you have a need for temporary help during a busy time period? Looking for a team of IT consultants for a special project? CSI can help. Call them at 800-582-0828 or go to thecsicompanies.com. Don't partner with just anyone. Partner with the CSI Companies, proud partner of your Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars Scoreboard Show, continues right now.
Welcome back. JP Shadrick, Mike Dempsey, 1917 Ravens over the Jags. Scoreboard Show continues. 355-NFL-1. 355-6351. If you don't, we have, 2 segments left. If you don't get in, 5th quarter with T-Wig and Hacker is coming up next, and they'll take your calls as well.
Yes. Apparently, Saqib is a man of his word so far. Have not heard from him. He said he was done with us. I don't think it was us particularly. I think he was done with the whole thing.
That's what he said.
Until something changed.
I remember it.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know if enough changed this week for him. Let's get back to the lines, JP, while we've got some time here. 355-6351, 355-NFL-1. Mike, you're next up on the Scoreboard Show. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, pretty good, guys. I got to disagree with that last caller who was talking about our defense's selfish penalties. You know, our offense had every opportunity to win this game in the fourth quarter, and all Bortles had to do was 2 things. Don't get sacked and don't throw a pick, and he just did it over and over again.
Not going to get an argument.
That's true.
Not going to get an argument from me on that. I mean,
interceptions,
the sacks were just showed to me a total lack of situational awareness. You just, you know, you hear it so many times and you watch broadcast, JP, and you're like, what is this guy thinking? Just get rid of the football. Just throw it away. Throw it out of the back of the end zone or throw it out of bounds or whatever the case may be. And those were 2 bad ones on the right before the field goal attempt, which got blocked. And then, of course, on the final drive, which basically killed you at that point in time. I mean, the play took long enough. You chewed up
enough time. Out.
At least throw it out of bounds, and you get back to the original line of scrimmage. You cost yourself the yardage. You burn the timeout. You could have thrown one over the middle to try to convert the first down, call the timeout, and then try to work the sidelines up the field. You still only need a long field goal to win it at that point.
Right.
I agree. I mean, we've had this debate since we started the post game. I respect Fred Taylor, and he may be right that the penalties are the biggest culprit in this. I don't deem them all selfish, but the penalties have been an epidemic for this team. To me, it came down to poor quarterback play, and it's been a trend for the most part this year with Blake. Yeah, he threw a couple of touchdowns today. Good. I'm glad he did, but it doesn't offset the three turnovers, and that's what's killing him right now. He's got six interceptions and the lost fumble last week in only three games, and even when he's completing passes to me, I mean, I don't know how many times I remarked throughout the course of the game, it just doesn't look good, right? It doesn't look crisp. The ball is fluttering like we saw almost like in that first rookie mini camp when he was here. Just he hasn't been sharp, and I don't know if it's a confidence thing, mechanics thing. I'm not smart enough to be able to dissect why exactly it's happening, but I can see it's happening.
Yeah, there's some hesitation, some double pumping stuff.
Right. Holding the ball too long, like a guy breaks open, and whether he's thinking about the turnovers, that's why I said in the pregame, maybe just play the gunslinger role, maybe. You know what? Just don't even think about it, because you're trying to play this. It seems like you're trying to play tentative football, or that the result is you're playing tentatively because you're trying to avoid the turnovers. And look at the result. You're getting them anyway. You're costing your team. Maybe they need to just say, you know what? Forget this. Let's just go out there and sling the ball around. I know it's not that simple. That's not how you put a game plan together.
No.
But that general feeling of, look, how many times can you run it into the middle of the line and get nothing? 12 carries for 14 yards for Chris Ivory. I don't think Chris Ivory wasn't running hard today. I just don't think there are any holes to be found in the running game right now. And I get it. A lot of movement on that offensive line with backups playing. And that's life in the big city, though. That's life in the NFL. And whether, you know, that's going to be an ongoing case with them, it's been the case no matter who's been in on the offensive line really for the last season plus at this point.
Chargers just scored a defensive touchdown, by the way, on the Colts, and an extra point pending. They're down 13-12 just before halftime.
At least somebody else in the AFC South is turning it over too there, Andrew Luck. Was that a sack fumble? Oh, was it a sack fumble? Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was.
Returned about 61 yards for a touchdown.
Let's get George up next here on the Scoreboard Show. George, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, I got to say, you know, the defense, except for the leapfrog incident, looked pretty good. But I got to say, the biggest thing with me seems to be time management, clock management. In the fourth quarter, why did we waste two of our timeouts, you know, when the Ravens had the ball? I was like dumbfounded.
I would have been dumbfounded if they didn't call them at that
point. Yeah,
you
got to call them because they're going to kick a field goal. You want some time to have the ball back.
Yeah,
if you
didn't call the timeouts, the Ravens could have practically run the clock down to nothing,
and that
field goal would have ended the game. You did. That was the right call, absolutely, to use the field goal or to use the timeouts to save the time. And it left them over a minute left on the clock, needing only a field goal to win it. They got the stop on third and short. That's NFL 101
right there, man.
You absolutely call the timeouts in that circumstance. That was good time management. You can argue, should they have been calling them at the end of the first half when they opted not to, and it ended up probably being the right thing unbeknownst to them, because the penalty to Malik Jackson extended the drive, and had you called the timeouts, Baltimore would have even more time to work with and maybe could have gotten a position to score a touchdown there. But at the end of the game, that's not even a question to me that was the right thing.
And I'll give you the drives before that when they had the ball and they're trying to run some clock there and they hadn't run the ball all day, and then the Ravens get the ball back. It's a whole – that situation was not ideal either, because you're trying to drain clock and you haven't been able to drain clock all day on offense.
Right.
I don't know if that counts as time management.
Yeah,
that's more of a
that's a rock and a hard place type situation.
Yeah.
But at JPN, when that
you know what I mean,
when
though.
They got the ball in that circumstance, I said, here's what they're going to do. They're going to try to run the ball and try to run clock, and it's not going to work because they haven't been able to do it all day. And Baltimore knew had to know it was coming. They were ganged up to stop it on first and second down, and you put yourself in third and long. That's when Blake got sacked and, you know, made that field goal attempt longer. I don't know if it was the length of the field goal attempt or if they just got great penetration regardless. I don't know. You know, sometimes you have a longer field goal, you try to kick it a slightly lower trajectory. I think Myers has plenty of leg that, to him, I don't know if the sack distance really impacts his ability. We see him kick 50-something yarders that go through at the top of the uprights. Yeah. He's got all the leg in the world. I don't know. Maybe it was just poor blocking up front. And Baltimore's had a knack in the last several years of blocking kicks as well.
10th blocked kick since 2014, punt, field goal, or extra point.
Regardless, you still don't want to put your kicker in a situation where he's got to kick
that long
of a field goal when you're already in a better spot.
Yeah, shorter field goals are better than longer.
They are better. Touchdowns are better than
that
any length field
too,
goal, right?
Yes, you are correct.
Do we want one more before we break?
Let's break. We'll
all right,
come back
do that.
And get a couple more and call it a show. How about that? 1917 Ravens over the Jaguars. We'll wrap up the scoreboard show after this on Jaguars Radio.
Tradition. For 135 years, Navy Mutual has served current and former military members and their families across the great state of Florida and around the world with low-cost life insurance. So we're proud to announce a new tradition, sponsoring the Jacksonville Jaguars. For life insurance and annuity products with no fine print or military service restrictions, visit NavyMutual.org. Navy Mutual, insuring those who serve.
Calling all Jacksonville runners. Kick off your weekend tailgate with the annual Stash Dash 5K at Everbank Field Saturday, October 15th at 8 a.m. Put in some work around the stadium, and we'll be waiting at the finish line to congratulate you with a cold one. Entry includes registration for the 5K and a ticket to the upcoming Raiders-Jags game at the bank, plus an official race shirt and finisher medal. Get ready to run. Register today at jaguars.com/stash-dash.
Want to see yourself on the video boards at a Jaguars game this season? Now you can, thanks to the Selfies and Slices promotion brought to you by Mellow Mushroom and the Jaguars. Come into any Jacksonville area Mellow Mushroom and snap a selfie with their featured Jags player cutout. Post it on Instagram and make sure to tag at Mellow Jags and use the hashtag Mellow Jags for a chance to win two tickets to the next home game and see your picture on the big screen while you're at the game. No purchase necessary. Must be 18 years of age or older to enter. See official rules for details.
Your family could go all the way to Super Bowl 51. Enter Ticketmaster's Super Bowl 51 Football is Family Sweepstakes, including four tickets to the Super Bowl, round trip airfare for four, a three-night hotel stay, a $500 gift card for the NFL shop, and more. To enter, text FAMILY to 842-538 or go to Ticketmaster.com/footballisfamily.
No purchase necessary. Legal license to U.S., Canada, except QBC, 18 plus. Word prohibited. And 12 p.m. PDO only 2017. See Ticketmaster.com/footballisfamily. The rules and alternative entry. Message data rates may apply. Up to two auto responses to entry. Sponsor Ticketmaster LLC.
Hey, Jaguars fans. You ready to score free McDonald's favorites this season? Just download and register on the McDonald's app. Cheer on our Jaguars. Win free food. The Jaguars' final score wins you a McDonald's favorite. 10 points gets a free six-piece chicken McNuggets. 20 points a free double cheeseburger. And 30 points a free Big Mac. It's good to be a Jaguars fan. Valid September 11th through January 1st. McDonald's app download and registration required. Valid only at participating McDonald's in the Northeast Florida, Gainesville, Southeast Georgia areas. No purchase required.
Brian Sexton here. There's nothing better than the cheer of Jaguars fans on game day. That's the same sound you could be making as a winner of the Dreamfinders Homes Take It to the House promotion. As the official home builder of the Jags, Dreamfinders is offering a chance for you to win $100,000 towards a new home. All you have to do is visit a Dreamfinders model to register. Now that's something to cheer about. For more information, visit DreamfindersHomes.com for models near you. And oh yeah, go Jags!
The Jaguars Scoreboard Show continues right now.
It continues after the 1917 loss to the Ravens. J.P. Shadrick, Mike Dempsey. This season, when the Jags kick a field goal of 40 yards or more, registered fans will score a free medium sub with a purchase of a sub, chips, and medium drink. To register, go to jaguars.com/firehousesubs. Everybody's eating today. Myers with a what was it, 49-yard field goal. That put the Jags ahead 17-16 at that point, about 7 minutes to play in the game. So everybody who is registered gets a free sub.
Got to register.
Got to register.
Make sure you do that if you haven't already.
And you got to purchase a sub, chips, and medium drink.
That'll work. Fair deal.
There you have
it. Seems like a fair deal to me.
If you don't get in here, the fifth quarter with T-Wig and Hackers coming up next, and they are awaiting your calls at 641-1010.
Let's see who does get in here, though, at 355-NFL-1. Alex is next up here on the Scoreboard Show. Hi, Alex.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
All right.
I just wanted to say I've been raised as a Jaguars fan since I was a little boy. I got season tickets when I was in the third grade, and my dad's been going to games even longer than that. And here we are, my senior year, and I feel as if I'm still seeing the same things that I was seeing 10 years ago. The team, it almost feels like we haven't made any progress in the right direction. We keep getting new talent. We keep hearing things about change, and I'm just not really seeing it on the field. I feel like right now it even goes beyond Gus Bradley with the coaching issues. I just guess my biggest wonder is why would Shad Khan and David Caldwell give the losingest coach in modern NFL history an extension when he hasn't really proven himself? Thank you, guys. We love what you guys do on this show. I'll take your response off the air.
All right, thanks.
I mean, I think, you know, whether you agree with it or not, I think the logic from their point of view of giving him an extension is you rarely want to see a coach as a lame duck in his final year of his deal. We saw Chuck Pagano do it, and it worked out for Indianapolis. At least he earned an extension there. Very rarely do you see a coach in the last year, because it basically tells the players that this guy doesn't have much authority. He's hanging by a thread. That's the facts of the matter. Now, you can argue, did he deserve the contract extension? I would have never given it to him, and I said that at the time it happened. So, but their feeling, you don't have to agree with this, but their feeling is that it was in an almost unprecedented level of rebuild,
yeah,
and that he didn't have the raw material to work with. And, you know, as Dave Caldwell said to Tony and I on Jaguars Today this summer, and probably said to a lot of people, that he didn't really hold the first 2 years against Gus. That's almost unheard of. So is it abnormal? Absolutely. Can I understand why they did it? Yes, but I don't agree with the fact that they did it, but that's what they've done. Look, the one-year extension is going to have no impact as to whether or not they retain Gus, you know, beyond next week or beyond the end of the year. The fact that Shad Khan has to, if he had to write him a check to, you know, pay off the last year of the deal, Shad Khan's quite capable. That's not going to be any kind of determining factor as to whether or not Gus right. Bradley has job security.
How about one more call?
How about Frank up next?
Let's finish strong, Frank.
Come on, Frank. What you got for us?
Hey, guys, I hope I don't let you down. I hope this is not absurd. After watching those last 2 or 3 minutes, Blake did look like he's not progressing, and the situational unawareness was just off the chain. I heard it said on The Herd this week, Colin Cowherd has been bashing our coaching staff this week, and he said our coaching staff looks lost. And he said Blake didn't pop like he was supposed to, and he said that we should go after Garoppolo. Do you guys have an opinion on that?
You know, 3 games into the guy was second in the league in touchdown passes last year. For me to sit here now, 3 games into the year immediately after that, and determine that they need to go for Jimmy Garoppolo, who you don't even know if the New England Patriots themselves might not try to re-sign at some point this season, because Tom Brady's 39 years old. Whether or not they should go after Garoppolo, keep in mind, how did Jacoby Brissett look on Thursday Night Football? Looked pretty adequate, right, running that team. They shut out the Houston Texans, right?
It was fairly basic, though.
It was, right, but my point being, Bill Belichick makes a lot of people look really good.
Yes.
Okay? So just because Jimmy Garoppolo has succeeded with the New England Patriots and looked good doing it in the first couple of games that he played, and he's only played a couple of games for them, is that going to translate when he's no longer playing for Bill Belichick and company? I don't know. You know, I just think you got to be careful. New England guys go to New England, and they all seem to, you know, and it's not magic. You got to give credit to the coaching staff and great film study, from what I hear up there in Foxborough.
Yeah.
Very good film study. Very detailed, in-depth, extra film that they take it. But,
yeah.
You know, look, to sit here now in week 3 and talk about they need to move on from Blake Bortles. Has he had a good season? Absolutely. He has looked like he's regressed to me. basically compared to how the level of play that he had last year, JP, which needed cleaning up with all the turnovers. But he's the turnovers have become an increasing problem at this point in time. But I think it's way too soon to write off a guy three games into a season immediately after he threw 35 touchdowns.
I agree with that. Absolutely. There's some troubling things right now, but you can't write off the entire rest of the season for him.
Let's let the next 13 games play out for Blake Bortles and see where things stand at the end. But I don't think that is a highly likely scenario to take place. My guess.
That'll do it for the Scoreboard Show.
Yes, it will.
And, hey, 0-3, got a rally this week. It'll be a relatively short week. The Jaguars travel Thursday.
It's probably good, man. They're going to break up in the routine.
Yeah.
Something different.
Yeah.
Because whatever's been happening, the results have been not what we want.
Well done, man.
Same to you.
We'll talk to you next
Safe
week.
Safe travels.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll do this again. You guys will do this again next week. Max Hockman producing for Jaguars.com. Tony Smith, Linda Fortunato, Victoria Edwards. For everyone involved, I'm JP Shadrick. That's it for the Scoreboard Show on Jaguars Radio.